Welcome to another InDeep Radio Show. I'm Angie Coiro. The American Legislative Exchange Council is getting kicked, and hard. Members and legislators can't get away fast enough. Just this week, Procter & Gamble cut their ties. Now, the backlash. We'll look this hour into the success so far and the challenges to come with ALEC and the right, coming up on InDeep. Before we move into our conversation on ALEC, we're going to talk a little bit about a new bill that has been proposed in California. You know about sex conversion therapy. It's getting rid of the gay. It's for those who feel that being gay is wrong or inappropriate, and they go to the right therapist, they can become straight again. It's long been controversial. In fact, just this week, someone who had been a proponent of it backed off, a very prominent scientist who said, you know, there were flaws in my logic, in my reasoning. And he's one of many who has now gone on record saying this stuff just doesn't work. If it doesn't work, is it right to actually work with a patient in the hopes that it will work? Well, California is now considering outlawing sex conversion therapy. And one of the forces behind that is State Senator Ted Lieu, who joins me now on the phone. Senator, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
You know, it's easy to see the wrong, and of course this comes from my very left perspective, it's easy to see the wrong in sexual conversion therapy because not only does it not work, and there's plenty of research that says it doesn't work, but it underlines the implicit idea that there's something bad about being gay in the first place, and you can make the case it complicates anyone's problems rather than solving them. But that may not compensate in some people's minds for the idea of telling a therapist and a patient what can go on between them.
Well, the bill doesn't do that. What the bill does is it bans so-called reparative therapy, which is where a therapist tries to convert someone who is homosexual to straight.
Right.
And the medical evidence is completely lacking. In fact, there is nothing in the DSM, you know, scientific manual that says sexual orientation is a mental illness or defect that requires any sort of cure or therapy.
Right, and I'm in full agreement with that. I definitely am not a fan of sex conversion therapy. But I guess that my question for you is, if you're talking about outlawing a certain kind of therapy, is that, for example, in cognitive therapy or talk therapy, does that reach into the therapy room and regulate what can be said?
That's a very good issue you point out. So when we presented the bill, the American Psychiatric Association patient witness actually said it is unethical for a therapist to tell their patient that they believe, you know, being homosexual is wrong and they're going to try to convert them to being straight. And so my bill is very narrowly targeted at reparative therapy. It doesn't address issues such as coming out issues or if you have, you know, questions about your sexual identity or you don't, you know, feel good or have anxiety. That's all fine to talk about. This is very narrowly focused on reparative therapy. It is something that a fringe group of therapists do. And what the bill does is it bans this therapy for children, anyone under 18, because some of the cases, the children later commit suicide having gone through this. And then for adults, it requires informed consent. And they have to sign a form saying they want to do this, even though there's no medical evidence for this practice.
So what that points out is that if you are a cognizant adult and you have been warned that this is not legitimate therapy and it doesn't work, you will still have the right to go ahead and have that therapy if you want it.
That is correct, because in society we let adults do all sorts of stupid and risky things, but we don't let children do that. So we don't, you know, let children smoke, whether or not their parents want them to. We don't allow children to drink alcohol. There's a whole host of things we ban for children, and my bill bans this for children because it is dangerous.
Now, of course, we record our show in Berkeley, and we're notorious for being pretty far to the left here, and it's hard to imagine that out there in California there are therapists illegitimately trying to change people's sexual orientation. Do you have an idea how prevalent the practice is in California?
So people may be surprised that NARTH, N-A-R-T-H, they are the prime group of therapists that do this practice and promote it. They are headquartered in California, actually in Sacramento, and their international version of this is also headquartered in Sacramento. And some of the leading practitioners are right here in California. And so that is another reason I'm bringing this bill, because I believe this needs to be shut down as soon as we can.
I can imagine you've already heard from them.
Yes, and some of them testified against the bill, and, you know, some of them were saying, you know, essentially that if you're a homosexual, it's because you had some deep-seated trauma earlier in your life. It's their job to uncover that deep-seated trauma, and once they do that, you know, voila, you'll be straight.
What do they say, in your experience, when they're presented with the evidence from their colleagues and from the, you know, the boards that make the rules amongst their colleagues, that this just doesn't work? I mean, do you hear how they dismiss it?
They do. They actually believe it's slanderous. We got an email from one of our leading practitioners believing that some journal article was slandering him, you know, saying, you know, how his research is wrong and biased. They just dispute basically what the American Psychological Association and the American Psychiatric Association have said on this issue.
Well, as they say, you're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. And Senator Liu, I'm glad you're clinging to the facts on this one, and I wish you luck with the bill.
Thank you very much.
Senator Ted Liu, California State Senator Ted Liu from District 28, and you can read more about the California bill that could, if it passes, outlaw sex conversion therapy. You'll find that on our website, which, as always, is at indeepradio.com. This is In Deep. I'm Angie Coiro. We're spending this whole hour talking about ALEC and its grandchildren. A lot of developments in ALEC this week, and we'll get into those shortly, talking to folks from both The Color of Change and PR Watch. But first of all, we need to be aware that although ALEC really sets the bar for behind-the-scenes legislation, both forming it and influencing it, talking to legislators in venues both legitimate and illegitimate, we stumbled across this article from Alternet by Sarah Seltzer and Lauren Kelly, and it's intriguingly entitled, Meet ALEC's Equally Despicable Anti-Choice Cousin, AUL. Nothing would do but that we talk to Sarah Seltzer. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
I guess it's no big surprise to anyone who's been paying attention that there's coordination behind the anti-choice laws and the quote-unquote morality-based legislation that we see coming up across so many of the states and in so many of the smaller jurisdictions. Can you compare the AUL to ALEC for us? Tell us where it's the same, where it's different. Introduce us to the AUL.
Sure. Well, the AUL is not a group of corporations the way ALEC is. Mm-hmm. It's its own anti-choice organization. But what they have in common is this idea of blueprint legislation, where they write model bills that legislators can sort of amend and adapt for their own states, which is why you see both with the Stand Your Ground laws and with laws that say, for instance, require mandatory ultrasounds before abortion, they're popping up all over the place in different states at the same time. It's not because legislators are having the same idea brilliantly, you know, mysteriously at the exact same time. It's because they're borrowing from model bills.
Wait, so you're saying really, God is not speaking to them on high? He's not. I thought it was descending in a beam of light.
They're not having simultaneous epiphanies. they are, you know, to make people's lives miserable. They're instead borrowing from model legislation, and that's, you know, what it does really is it becomes very difficult to play defense on so many fronts at the same time. And that's why I think what you do see in common is the idea that laws like the Stand Your Ground laws and the union busting laws and the anti-choice laws are happening there at such a rapid rate that it's hard to beat them all back at the same time, because they're happening locally, really.
One thing you have to give Americans United for Life, I mean, ALEC has a really generic name, you know, legislative education. Americans United for Life is at least straightforward about what they do, but how straightforward are they in terms of their level of influence? I mean, do they try to keep a low profile? Do they brag openly about their accomplishments?
I think that they're much less trying to keep a low profile than ALEC. I don't think ALEC initially wanted people to realize that there were all these, you know, corporate behemoths behind some of these really appalling laws, because, of course, when it did come to light, everyone started backtracking. The pro-life, quote-unquote pro-life, we call it anti-choice movement, is much more open about, you know, the war that they're waging on, quote-unquote, you know, morality. But on the other hand, AUL is not as well-funded as ALEC, because they don't have those corporate behemoths, so they're kind of more their own group. But what they are very successful, they have been very successful at, is writing this kind of model legislation. And if you look at any front on the the wars that we've seen in the last year, the war on women, they're pretty much there, whether they're sort of on the front lines or they're backing efforts to defund Planned Parenthood. They were involved in the push to get Susan G. Komen to drop funding from Planned Parenthood. They've been behind some of these ultrasound laws. So they are definitely everywhere in the battle against abortion rights. And I don't think they're as secretive as Alec.
Talking to Sarah Seltzer of Alternate about Americans United for Life, kind of a mini Alec as we spend this hour looking at the American Legislative Education Council, what their influence has been, and the really, really crappy couple weeks that they've been having. Where does the power at AUL come from? Are they deeply entrenched with Congress? Are there movers and shakers behind it that we need to be aware of?
Well, so one person who is involved at AUL is Charmaine Yost, who is their president and CEO. And they also have, and she used to work for Mike Huckabee, so she has some political connections there. And then there's Abby Johnson, who is this sort of notorious woman who used to work for Planned Parenthood, and she became a quote-unquote frothing anti-choice advocate. She believes that Planned Parenthood is in cahoots with Satan, so she's an interesting character. And their president, Charmaine Yost, is the woman who, according to the Washington Post, got Komen to defund Planned Parenthood. She was kind of whispering in Susan G. Komen's ear, pushing them to do this for a long time before they actually did, and it ended up being, you know, a debacle that I think is very comparable to the backlash against Alec, really. It was another kind of situation that was brewing for a long time, and then kind of went a step too far, and there was some major pushback against Komen, just the way there has been against Alec. So I think there was a kind of similar moments mm-hmm. in each moment. And she's the woman from AUL obviously has Charmaine Yost obviously has a lot of influence to be able to have convinced Susan G. Komen to do that.
You know, I've gone to Wikipedia. I think that your mention of Abby Johnson is worth lingering on for just a moment, because this is someone whose very reports of what she did at Planned Parenthood and how she had her quote-unquote conversion. I'm just going to pull this off Wikipedia with the disclaimer, of course, Wikipedia is not written by God, as this legislation is. Johnson's description of her conversion has been questioned. Planned Parenthood stated its records don't show any ultrasound-guided abortions performed on the date when Johnson said she witnessed the procedure, which is what theoretically sparked her conversion. And the physician who performed abortions at the Bryant Clinic stated that Johnson had never been asked to assist in an abortion. She said it was a 13-week-old fetus. Records from the Texas Department of Health show no such abortions performed at the Bryant Clinic on the date in question. And I bring this up to let people know that this is the caliber of people who are running AUL. So let me ask you, Sarah Seltzer, is there anyone working with them that's more of a saner voice that is maybe perhaps to temper her input? Because when you're as openly out there as she is, it can limit your effectiveness. So are there quieter people behind the lines that maybe are a tad more effective to a wider range of people?
I'm sure there are. I mean, Abby Johnson is the quintessential example of the right wing is always looking for that conversion story. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. that moment when someone who is pro-choice, quote unquote, saw the horror of what they were doing. So she is sort of a perfect poster child. And we, as you just said, her story is, there are huge holes in her story that shed a lot of doubt on her words, but she serves the purpose of providing that story. But as for, you know, the people who are actually running the organization, that, you know, they're much more, you know, politically canny. I mean, clearly, like I mentioned, there's a former Huckabee staffer. I mean, if you look at their website, everything is couched in the most neutral language imaginable, and they claim to be scientifically backed. So it's a very muted, sort of canny presentation that they put there. And then I think Abby Johnson is really more someone who's probably there to rile up for the purpose of riling up the base, getting people worked up about the issue, less for the more subtle policy decisions that they may be making.
Well, in fact, I think that's worth pointing out, because if you look at the AUL site and you look at some of the legislation that they've been behind, for example, in Arizona, Trent Franks proposed legislation that would ban race or sex selective abortions. And there's no, forgive me if I'm wrong, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe that there's any quantifiable evidence that this is happening in the first place.
No, this is the next big anti-abortion tactic that will be, is important to be on the lookout for. In fact, Planned Parenthood has just reported this week that they're being targeted by another sting of people coming into probably people from Lila Rose's conservative group that have been coming undercover into Planned Parenthood and asking for race and sex selective abortions. And so this is like their new way that they think they're going to get Planned Parenthood. And of course, the issue is, first of all, it's not a huge issue in our country. But second of all, it's very complicated because of, you know, doctor-patient confidentiality, and doctors aren't health professionals aren't allowed to say, well, I don't like your reasons for having this procedure, so I'm not going to let you have it. So it's a very, very tricky, sneaky way for them to try and, again, continue to kind of erode abortion rights through these kind of hot-button issues, just the way they did with the quote-unquote partial birth abortion. And that's just sort of – that's been their MO. It's, these ultrasound laws is just sort of chipping away at abortion rights and trying to change the public conversation to things like, you know, these alleged race and sex selective abortions instead of actually talking about women's real situation and trying to just change the topic as often as possible away from women's lives and women's health.
One of the links in your article at Alternet, and I'm talking to Sarah Seltzer of Alternet about the Americans United for Life. One of the links in your article goes to Jezebel, which I have to say treats this with its usual restraint. I love the language that they use to deal with this. When you have to bring Satan into the conversation, you know you have a problem, for example. But one of the things that they point out is that this group is operating with only a $4 million budget, and as large as that might sound to an average person, that's pretty darn small for a group that's trying to influence the dialogue and actual legislation. Is my impression correct that their influence is disproportionate to their funding and their size?
I think so, and I think it's because, for a number of reasons, I think it's also because when these Tea Party, these new representatives and legislators from the Tea Party got elected 2 years ago, they were supposed to be dealing with the economy, but they didn't really know how to deal with the economy. It was supposedly an election for, you know, issues of taxation and things like that, but instead of really tackling jobs and issues like that, they ran for this model legislation, and that's why you saw this dramatic shift in the landscape on women's rights starting at the very beginning of 2011 when this new class of representatives took office. And I think they were borrowing, that's when these model bills, which had been around for a while, started really getting traction and passing because we had these GOP-controlled governing bodies all over the place. So I think that it was sort of their influence has been in synergy with the Tea Party's ascendance as well, which is why, you know, even though they have a small budget, they've been able to get this record number of bills. It really was. It was a record year. I think there were 91
anti-choice. That is disproportionate.
Yeah, it's very disproportionate.
Sarah, our time is up. I really appreciate the article, and I thank you for taking time to talk to us about it.
Thanks for having me on. Take care.
All right, take care. Sarah Seltzer is with Alternet, and you will find the link to the article that she wrote with Lauren Kelly, Meet Alec's Equally Despicable Anti-Choice Cousin, AUL. You'll find that on our website at indeepradio.com. Stick around. We're going into more of the progress around Alec this week, coming up on In Deep Radio. Welcome back to In Deep. I'm Angie Carr. We're spending this hour on the terrible, horrible, bad week that Alec has had, and I'm laughing because that's good news. It's good news. As many of our listeners have been following since we debuted the show, Alec has been a topic that we come back to again and again. The American Legislative Exchange Council, which is essentially a right-wing think tank plus legislative powers, because they've incorporated into their work and into their funding so many legislators and so many lobbyists working together in quiet to get duplicate legislation passed across the country. And we've particularly seen this emphasized lately with the Stand Your Ground law that debuted in Florida. Alec and the NRA working together took it and ran with it. And lo and behold, the same kind of legislation pops up all over the country as more and more legislators try to pass it. So the good news that came down this past week is that the very campaign we have been emphasizing here on In Deep Radio, and that's a combined effort of Color of Change and PR Watch at the Center for Media and Democracy, has really started to take some knocks. We're going to introduce you to some wonderful, juicy list of all the people who have left ALEC, and we're going to assess what kind of damage that has done, what their reaction has been, and some of the backlash as well. I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned here on how good activism works when good minds work together. So I'm going to bring on Brendan Fisher. He's a law fellow with the Center for Media and Democracy, which is at prwatch.org. Brendan, hi. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And we got Gabriel Ray Gudlati on the line, too, with colorofchange.org, and they worked very hard on that as well. He's director of strategy there. Gabriel, hi.
Hi. Great to be here.
Let me start with you, Gabriel. In fact, Color of Change has had the petitions going online. They've exerted a lot of pressure. Can you tell me some of the particular strategies that you have seen paying off in this last week?
Sure. So our campaign started, we launched the campaign in December of 2011. And at that point, we had our members sign a petition to all the corporations that support ALEC, calling on them to leave and focusing on ALEC's connection to voter suppression and their pushing of discriminatory voter ID laws across the country. And since then, we've been reaching out to companies privately to both make sure they understand what they're supporting when they support ALEC and the full range of what they're supporting, to kind of convey the concerns of our members and make sure they understand what our community feels about ALEC and their relationship to ALEC as corporations. And then to also make sure that they understand what a public campaign will look like that kind of puts their brand next to ALEC and next to all the things that ALEC has been involved in, so that they have the information they need to really make a decision about their relationship with ALEC, kind of knowing that that relationship is going to be in the sunlight and it won't be behind closed doors and kind of in the dark anymore.
And of course, there's the cliche that sunlight is the best disinfectant. Brendan Fisher, I know that you folks at PR Watch found that out as one group after another started to dump ALEC. What are the most recent large corporations that have decided they can't afford to be seen in public with ALEC?
So this week, Procter & Gamble announced that they would be dropping their ALEC membership, and that made them the 13th member corporation to announce that they were no longer going to be supporting ALEC financially through their membership dues and through their grants and other operating support, as well as the Gates Foundation, which had given ALEC a pretty big grant to work on education policy. So this is really a success, and these are positive steps in the exposure of ALEC's extreme agenda.
You know, one thing I found interesting as I was watching people cut their ties to ALEC this week, and it wasn't just companies, there were also legislators that did it as well. And one of the legislators begged off of ALEC, saying, boy, when I joined years ago, it was not this right-wing organization that was pushing such a conservative agenda. And I thought to myself that this thing was started by Paul Weyrich, who really never made a secret of his conservative agenda. Gabriel, as far as you know, is there any truth to that? Did ALEC evolve into this monster that we're dealing with now, or was it originally started to do exactly what it's been doing these last few years?
Well, you know, Paul Weyrich, who you mentioned, it has a very famous quote that you may have seen in some documentaries or heard, which is basically he's speaking to a conservative audience, and I think this was in the 70s or 80s, and basically says, I don't want everyone to vote.
Yes.
And that our leverage in elections goes down as the voting populace goes up. So what ALEC has been doing, well, it may be relatively new for the organization to get involved in laws that are trying to suppress the vote. It's clearly in line with the agenda and the philosophy that was there from their very founding. And what's also clear is that ALEC for a long time has been a vehicle for corporations to push laws behind the scenes and in a way that allows them to write off the money they spend doing it.
Brandon, you want to get in on this as well?
Sure. Yeah, it's pretty amazing with all of the coverage that ALEC has gotten in the last few weeks that this is an organization that has been around since 1973. And as you mentioned, it was started by Paul Weyrich, who that same year also founded the Heritage Foundation and went on to found the Moral Majority. And ALEC started as mostly a generically conservative organization. They were fighting the Equal Rights Amendment. In the late 70s, they fought against the constitutional amendment that would have given the District of Columbia equal voting rights in the Senate. And they teamed up with some questionable organizations, some organizations with white supremacist ties, because giving votes to the people of the District of Columbia would most likely increase the vote, the voting power of people of color. So this groundwork was laid a long time ago. And then it was really, I think, in the 80s when they started to bring corporations in, into the organization and allowed corporations this new vehicle for influencing state legislators. And you saw in the early 90s the spread of the truth in sentencing laws and three-strike you're out laws that put more people in jail for more time. You saw the effort to privatize prisons. And then you continue to see ALEC evolve throughout the years. And I can't speak for this particular legislator about whether there was more diversity of opinion at the meetings in earlier years. But we do know that now what ALEC is basically just a way for corporations and special interest groups like the National Rifle Association to influence state legislators.
You know, I think one of the things, as we listen to talk of how it evolved and how big it became, and I think one thing that ALEC and its supporters were counting on to continue, which the two of you and your organizations actually did bring to a halt, is people's not only ignorance of them, but essentially indifference to that. And I know a lot of people in America are indifferent to politics altogether, and even those who take an interest might have trouble grasping how this super secret organization can work and how the legislation makes its way across the country. Brendan, let me start with you on this one. How much of the effort of CMD and PR Watch just went to just plain education, getting people to grasp how this worked and what it was?
Yeah, that's a huge part of what we've been trying to do, because the organization has operated in secret for so long. Up until last year, people just didn't have the resources to really understand ALEC's influence on their state. There'd been efforts in the past to try and describe what ALEC is and what kind of impact it's having on all of our laws, but it was almost impossible to really explain it or to understand the breadth of ALEC's influence on our laws because it was so secret. And last year, a whistleblower released over 800 previously secret model bills that were approved by the ALEC task forces and were pre-voted on by the corporations and legislators that are members of the ALEC task forces. And we analyzed those bills, and we published them on our website, alecexposed.org. And from there, people had the resources to begin to put the pieces together to track the influence of ALEC in their state. And then we were able to conduct additional research to really understand how ALEC works and how much influence it gives to its corporate members and to the special interests that pay to be a member of ALEC and pay to get access to state legislators. So we've really been trying to develop these resources and make them publicly available for members of the general public as well as journalists to really influence ALEC's influence in their state and to help shed some light on this organization that's operated in secret for way too long.
We're going to continue this conversation with Gabriel and Brendan on the other side of this break as you're listening to indeepradio.com. As you hear them mention websites, remember you can pick them up at our website. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, too. In Deep with Angie Cuero on Facebook. We tweet at In Deep Radio. We'll be right back. In Deep Radio is a production of TalkBack Media. We are supported in part by our listeners. TalkBack Media produces discussions on key political, social, and cultural issues available for live, digital, audio, and video venues. Learn more online at indeepradio.com. And if you are in a position to help us keep on the air, click one of the PayPal links on the side of the page. One-time gifts or a small monthly donation, whatever works for you. We appreciate it. Thanks. In a conversation on In Deep Radio about Alec's very horrible, terrible, awful last couple of weeks and how pleased we are to hear that, I'm Angie Cuero with In Deep Radio, and I'm talking to Gabriel Ray Goodlatte, who's with colorofchange.org, and Brendan Fisher, who is with the Center for Media and Democracy at prwatch.org. Gabriel, we were talking before we broke this up about trying to get people educated about Alec to enable the kind of changes that we've been seeing. Do you have any sense of whether this brought new people to become politicized, or was it more a matter of educating people who were already political and just didn't know about Alec?
Well, I think it's probably a bit of both. And I really want to just recognize the amazing work that PR Watch has done to expose Alec and to really do the research necessary to uncover and deconstruct how Alec operates and what they've actually been involved in. And our work wouldn't have been possible without that work. We really relied on PR Watch as a resource to be able to both know what corporations are involved in Alec, what policies Alec is pushing, and that has enabled us to hold Alec accountable. I think that our members are African Americans, allies, basically anyone who cares about racial justice in this country. So they're people that have taken action on any number of different issues. And what really kind of struck a nerve with a lot of our members was hearing not just what Alec is involved in, but how they do it. The fact that major corporations are involved with Alec in pushing laws that suppress the right to vote, and the fact that those corporations are everyday household names that many of our members support with their consumer dollars and would just feel completely uncomfortable supporting the policies that they're pushing through Alec.
In fact, Brendan Fisher, one of your fairly recent columns on PR Watch, talked about support that's coming in now that these makers of consumer products are moving out. It's no big surprise that the Koch brothers stepped up. Alec gets their money pulled from Kraft. They get their money pulled from one organization after another. And here come the Koch brothers and give them money. What's happening with that?
Yeah, the Koch brothers have been involved with Alec for a long time. In the mid-90s, they gave a $500,000 grant to Alec when it was struggling financially. With Koch Industries, they've paid membership dues. They've paid conference sponsorship fees. They pay to be on the task forces. In the past, they've had a representative on the Alec Board of Directors, or Private Enterprise Board of Directors. And then on top of that, from the Koch Family Foundations, they give additional grants to Alec for operating support. So Alec is a major beneficiary of Koch spending, and you know it's very possible that they will continue to be.
And your article that I referred to talks about how the Americans for Prosperity, which is Koch-funded, started this letter-writing campaign. I mean, these people are not taking the attacks on Alec sitting down. Some of the language is notable, and I'm quoting from the article you wrote here. It reproduces a letter from the Action Center of Americans for Prosperity. The left is desperate to disparage free market principles. And the current target is the American Legislative Exchange Council, a nonprofit organization dedicated to assisting state legislators while they work to promote free market policies. And then you say the same phraseology that turned up in the Action Center letter started showing up in letters to legislators around the country, which ironically just proves the reach and influence of ALEC.
Yeah, and I think as the campaign that was initiated and led by Color of Change and our allies started to really take hold, and as more and more corporations were dropping their membership, and more people started to understand what ALEC was and become concerned about it, ALEC reached out for help, and they held a meeting, an online meeting, put on by the Heritage Foundation to brief right-wing bloggers on how to support ALEC. It was basically an SOS to the right-wing blogosphere to help counter the messages that everyone else was putting out there about what ALEC really was. And that was broadcast on Breitbart TV. And apparently Americans for Prosperity was one of the people who heeded the call to jump in and try and show support for ALEC, try and generate some effort or support for ALEC.
Gabriel, we just have about 2 minutes to delve into this, but you know, I'm assuming that all of those people that were called upon by Breitbart and by ALEC were not a multicultural diversity of websites and bloggers. But one of the things that I think has lost a bit of attention is the efforts at voter suppression that ALEC engages in, and that is of particular interest to the different racial communities around the country. What is it that ALEC is up to that they have not stopped doing about the voter ID suppression?
Well, so we know what ALEC has been involved in pushing, and they've been involved in pushing voter ID laws across the country. And these are laws that discriminate against African Americans, Latinos, the poor, the elderly, the disabled, because all of those groups are less likely to have the required photo ID they would need to vote under these laws. And it can be, in many cases, very cumbersome and expensive to go through the process to get that ID. And in fact, these laws don't solve any problem that actually exists. They're in fact designed to restrict those groups from voting, and they're designed to have a disproportionate impact. ALEC has said that they've disbanded the Public Safety and Elections Task Force that was responsible for that law, for spreading it across the country.
Mm-hmm.
What a key spokesman for them has said since then, the head of that committee has said, those issues are going to be shifted to other committees, and this really doesn't affect our work overall. And when pressed on that, he wasn't willing to take anything off the table in terms of what ALEC will be involved in the future on voting or any other issue.
That is exactly where we're going to pick it up when we come back in our conversation with Gabriel and Brendan as we talk about ALEC. I'm Angie Carroll. You're listening to In Deep.
Just give me some truth. No short head, yellow belly, son of tricky dicky, gonna roll up.
This is In Deep. I'm Angie Coiro, and we're spending this hour on a postmortem of a very bad couple of weeks for ALEC. The American Legislative Exchange Council has lost so much funding and so many members, but it is to a certain extent rolling with the punches. So we're going to examine their reaction here and see what there is to expect as we move along. ALEC Exposed is on prwatch.org. I encourage you to read all the content there. Colorofchange.org is another major mover and player in trying to disarm ALEC, no pun intended there, as they work with the NRA and as they work to engage in voter suppression with laws that just make it that much more difficult for people to get to the polls and get that vote in there. We're talking to Gabriel Ray Goodlatte, and he is with colorofchange.org. And with PR Watch and the Center for Media and Democracy, we have Brendan Fisher on the line. Gabriel, you were just talking about the statements that we heard from ALEC when they took a couple body blows and they said, well, we're going to dissolve this panel that we've been working with the NRA on because, of course, they got so much grief with the Stand Your Ground laws. And they also promised another couple of reforms. But right before the break, you were saying that it's not clear they're going to engage in any of that cleaning up.
That's right. And, you know, just at the top of this week, the chairperson of that committee, he's a state senator, Republican state senator, basically said, those issues are going to be shifted to other committees. This really doesn't affect our work overall. He was downplaying the significance of their move and doing it publicly. You know, this was after ALEC was kind of doing damage control. This guy was willing to go out and say, you know what, we're not really making any real changes here. And I think he's maybe gotten into a little trouble for making that comment because he's since today, Media Matters has a piece up where he tries to kind of backpedal a little bit and say, well, you know, we really aren't going to, you know, voter suppression and stand your ground laws aren't going to be a priority for us in the future. But if you look carefully at what he says, he's actually not making promises that ALEC won't engage in voter ID laws. He's not making promises that ALEC won't keep pushing stand your ground laws. He says it's being all still figured out. And in fact, he says that many of the issues that the Public Safety and Elections Task Force dealt with are actually also economic issues, which ALEC has said is what it wants to focus on from now on. And so a lot of those issues will make sense for ALEC to continue pushing as economic issues, and those include things, some of the gun laws, things like SB 1070 in Arizona, the show your papers laws, it's come to be known. Mm-hmm. And so ALEC is really not doing anything real to change its agenda. What they're doing is some PR to try to stop losing their corporate donors.
Brendan, it seems that the NRA had a natural gut reaction to ALEC saying initially that they were going to dissolve that particular panel. Were we looking at theater there?
Yeah, I'm not real sure. The NRA has long been an ALEC supporter. They've long used ALEC as a vehicle to push their gun laws and to advance their interests. So I think we'll see what really happens with this announcement.
Let's talk about the companies that have stuck by ALEC, and I'm kind of wondering what makes them so glued to the organization despite the bad publicity, despite the outcry. State Farm, I've just had to drop the insurance company I've had for 20 years because State Farm will not give ALEC up. And Johnson & Johnson has clung tight, even though, you know, you look at their counterpart Kraft, and they left. What do you think, Brendan, is keeping these companies on?
You know, I think it's hard to say. I mean, it's surprising that these companies who spend so much money on advertising and so much money trying to build their brand and build positive associations with their brand would continue to support an organization when they know that people are going to associate their brand with voter suppression and with anti-immigrant sentiment. I think one of the reasons ALEC has been so successful over the past 30 or 40 years is just that it's effective. It gives corporations unprecedented access to legislators. It creates many opportunities for corporations and special interests to influence legislators and sidestep, in many cases, sidestep state ethics and lobbying laws, and also to sidestep IRS law. And they can be very effective in corporations can be very effective in advancing their policies through ALEC. Unfortunately, corporations and special interests advancing their policies through ALEC is often at the expense of the public interest. But these corporations apparently are deciding that their ability to influence legislators outweighs their interest in maintaining their brand integrity.
Gabriel, do you have any sense about whether these last couple companies can be dislodged, or do we just look at them as a loss now and move on to other techniques, other tactics?
Well, I think there is a good chance that some of these companies still will make the right decision and decide to do the right thing. You know, our members have been making hundreds of phone calls to each of the companies you've mentioned, or they're also now making phone calls to Amazon.com. And what our members have been hearing, I'll take the example of State Farm. State Farm is keeping very close track of what they're hearing on this issue. And they've been telling our members who've been calling that, you know, they're taking notes of the number of people that call, they're taking notes of the number of policyholders that call, and that information is going to be presented to their corporate leadership, which will make a decision. And so I think there's a chance that with a company like State Farm, it may just be taking a little while for the gears to turn inside the corporation that would be required to actually make a decision like this. And so I think we should definitely keep the pressure on. And I would just say that, you know, we're going to be keeping the pressure on these corporations, and we are going to be continuing to target all corporations that continue to support ALEC, and we'll be announcing new public targets in our campaign soon.
That's Gabriel Ray Goodlatte with colorofchange.org, and that's one of the websites that you can go to. We're glad you're interested in listening. We're glad you're interested in getting the information, but the most important thing for you to do is to take some action to help out these guys and all of us in the quest to defund ALEC entirely, if at all possible. Gabriel Ray Goodlatte, you can find their work going on at colorofchange.org, and you can go to prwatch.org, and you're going to find all the work with ALEC Exposed. Very important stuff going on there. And from that group, we have Brendan Fisher with us. Gabriel, I want to stay with you for a moment, and I want to talk about some of the backlash. And bear with me as I express that I almost see a parallel to what we've been seeing with the Republican presidential primary. They needed the support of the Tea Partiers. They needed the support of the fundamentalists and the extreme right-to-lifers. And the closer we get to the real campaign, the one-on-one campaign against Barack Obama, they have to figure out how to divest themselves of the crazies or how to appease everyone at once. And as is happening right now with ALEC, they've got a higher public profile than they've ever had. They're facing a ton of disapproval, and yet their supporters are the likes of Michelle Malkin. And I want to read a couple excerpts from her attack piece on Color of Change. And she focuses on Rashad Robinson, who runs the organization now. And boy, she pulls out all the stops. You know, she of course has to cite Saul Alinsky, and she has to talk about radicals. And she points out that Robinson previously lobbied for felon voting rights at the left wing. This is like a drinking game. Every time she gives a cliche, you'd be completely wasted at the end of it, because of course she mentions Soros and she mentions Fair Vote. The group has repeatedly fought common sense efforts to rein in voter fraud, which, of course, they'd rather keep people away from the polls. Unsurprisingly, she said, Robinson is close to the community organizer-in-chief's administration, community organizer. While media director at a gay rights group, gay rights, Robinson traveled to Serbia in 2010 to officially represent the U.S. at a gay pride festival. He was invited by the Obama State Department. There's much worse than that as well, but my point, Gabriel, is that I don't know that ALEC can afford to be associated with extremists at the same time it's trying to pacify people like me who are giving up our state, you know, my State Farm insurance. So do you sense that this is going to be a cost to them?
Well, you know, there's a lot of things I can say about this. I think that it's at this point, it's a little bit hard to know where to draw the line between extremists and so-called, you know, moderate voices on the right. When, you know, the Wall Street Journal editorial page also attacked us with all kinds of complete falsehoods, just, you know, outright.
What did they say?
Well, they talk about Van Jones as leading our organization and leading this effort when he hasn't been in actively involved in Color of Change's work or involved with us in any way for years. they misquoted the size of our membership to be a tenth of what it actually is. But, you know, it's been interesting, and I think kind of more importantly, there's the falsehoods, but then there's the overall argument that those on the right have used to kind of try to attack our campaign and discredit it, which goes something like, we're opposed to free market policies, and we want to shut down debate, and we're bullying companies, and we're trying to cut off support for the ideas we're opposed to instead of debating them.
Yep.
You know, I think our campaign really is actually completely in the spirit of the free market and of free speech. What we're actually doing is allowing our members to make their voices heard. We're facilitating the voices of our members being heard, and we're talking about what ALEC is and what it does, and we're being honest about it.
But, you know, one thing about that technique, and Brendan, I want to take this over to you. The people on the right who say that this is a free speech issue, most of them, Michelle Malkin and the Wall Street Journal, they know it's not. They know it's not about free speech. They know it's not about Saul Alinsky. They know it's not about whether we're affiliated with gay right groups or community organizers. And they're always throwing out these accusations to essentially waste our time and tangle us up in things like that. So, Brendan, what's the appropriate way to answer this without granting it validity, without saying this is even worth discussing that we're shutting down free speech?
Yeah, it's difficult. And I think as you referenced earlier, I don't think this is anything new for ALEC to be associated with people on the far right or on the fringe. At their 2011 meeting in New Orleans, they had a panel called CO2 is Good for You. Oh no, the name of the panel was Warming Up to Climate Change, How CO2 is Good for You. And they said the speaker said that because CO2 levels have been rising throughout the 20th century and the length of lives have also been rising, therefore CO2 must be good for you. So ALEC has long associated itself with crazies.
Wait a minute, is The Onion sponsoring ALEC now?
You might think so.
That's absurd.
So. Yeah, but I mean, I think Gabriel has a really good point about this. What this campaign is very much a free market campaign. The public has a right to know what their consumer dollars are going to support. And, you know, companies have the right to support whatever causes they please, but they should know that there are many consumers who don't want their consumer dollars going to support something they find morally objectionable.
And that's what we can capitalize on. Gabriel, can we cross party lines with that a little bit? Because I have seen some people on the right disavowing ALEC, the more temperate people, the people who actually give thought to their political positions, saying, I don't want my dollars going here. I don't care if this is a liberal cause or not. Are you seeing that kind of crossover?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, anyone who cares about the right to vote and equality in the right to vote should not be supporting ALEC, should not be supporting companies that support ALEC. And that's something that everyone on the right should care about, and everyone on the left should care about it. If we care about having a real democracy, then organizations that try to undermine, you know, the most basic rights that make that possible should be seen as kind of toxic and outside the mainstream to just about everyone. And, you know, there's a whole host of issues you could say that about that ALEC is involved in. On Stand Your Ground, there have been a lot of conservative groups opposed to those laws. There have been a lot of law enforcement groups opposed to those laws. There's no reason this should be a left-right issue. This is actually, and the other thing is, this is an issue around how our laws are made and what kind of influence corporations get to have over the political process. And I saw comments on Michelle Malkin's blog post that were expressing concern about the power that corporations have and the influence they wield over our political process. It was a little bit misdirected because their anger was directed at the corporations that had left ALEC, which is, you know, what's making it possible for corporations at the state level to wield that kind of influence. Mm-hmm. But the sentiment, it extends, you know, across the political spectrum.
Brendan, we found out today, and for our listeners who don't know, we record this show during the week for rebroadcast on the weekend, found out today, Thursday, that the Washington Post which owns Kaplan outright. Kaplan is an ALEC supporter. Brendan, are there indications that there are more threads connected to ALEC where we still haven't unearthed exactly who's supporting them and where those threads might lead?
There certainly are. There's between 250 and 300 corporations that are members of ALEC. That's an approximate number. And as well as a number of think tanks, and there's also other foundations that have given money to ALEC. So this is a big organization, and there's also around between 1,500 and 2,000 legislators who are ALEC members. So there's a lot here. It's a big organization. They receive their funding from a variety of sources that seek to influence legislators and the legislative process. So there's a lot more to be found out.
In terms of trying to, for our listeners who care and want to do some action around this, are both of you keeping pages on your site so that we can see who's still supporting ALEC and who has quit? Let me start with Gabriel on that. Do you have that on Color of Change?
We don't have a list like that. What we do have are, if you go to our press page, colorofchange.org/press, you can see press releases thanking all the companies that have left. And I believe PR Watch does have a list.
Okay, so Brendan, we're gonna pop people over to that, and of course, Color of Change has a lot of their own activities going on there. And mostly, I just want to endorse all the work you're doing, and I thank you both. And one last item I want to bring up, and our show is listener supported, so it's odd for me to ask money for somebody else, but these are two organizations that we don't have the money. The other side's got all the money, so both of these people both of these groups have places where you can donate to the cause as well. A little bit of a hint there. So I want to thank you, Brendan Fisher, for spending time with us from PR Watch.
Thank you.
And Gabriel, I thank you too. Gabriel Ray Goodlatte, who has joined us from colorchange.org. Good work, and keep it up.
Thanks so much.
And you're listening to In Deep. I'm Angie Coiro. Stick around for more of In Deep. In the next hour, we're talking about human trafficking. And that means everything from labor in sweatshops to prostitution, international, national, all the angles we can fit into 1 hour. It's a heck of a story. I hope you stick around for that. You can follow us on Twitter at In Deep Radio. We're on Facebook too, In Deep with Angie Coiro. And please do send us feedback, suggestions, and money at our website, indeepradio.com. Yes, I know it's gonna get better, 'cause it almost always does. I can't say much about the who and how, but I believe it just because. The day by day our bonds unweave, mammon gloats as nature creeps. Thanks for tuning in this week to In Deep with Angie Coiro, a production of Talkback Studios. You can get more information about us at indeepradio.com. And while you're there, you can become a member and support our work. There's a link there to contact us, too, with any questions or feedback. We're developing a series on mental health issues in our country, especially in this economy, and we'd love to have you be part of that. Please send us your topic suggestions, your stories, and your questions through our website. Click the contact button at indeepradio.com. Join us again this time next week for two more hours of in-depth conversation. I'm Angie Coiro. We'll see you then. You're listening to WPWC, 1480 AM, Dumfries, Virginia. We Act Radio, home of Washington's progressive working community.